So the newcomer of the bunch with 31 years of sobriety, Joanne, will you come up and speak?
Be a newcomer and have 31 years. Wow. My name's Joanne. I'm an alcoholic and a drug addict. And thank you for being here. Wow, it means a lot to me. I know that when I first got sober, I was scared witless to walk into an AA meeting. And what I found over these years is that it's just gotten easier and easier and easier and easier to go to AA meetings. It's a big part of my life. I don't think I would have 31 years in my life if I didn't go to meetings every week. And, you know, AA is such a big part of my life. It's changed me from being that person that was out there practicing her character defects in a foul and ugly way into changing those character defects into character assets. You know, I don't think for me they've went anywhere. They've just kind of converted over into this other person that I've become today. I know I was sponsoring this one girl that I thought I was like a Looney Tune, and she was just as loony as I was, if not more. And today she's running a program up in prisons for alcoholics and addicts, and you know, she just rocks. She's got 28 years, and I'm not saying that because I'm her sponsor. I'm saying that because the program works in her life, and she's of service. And if you're new in here, or if you have a little bit of time, service is one of the big things in this program that will keep you sober. You know, it is, you know, I've always been of service wherever I've went, however long I've been sober. My sponsor said, you, little girl, are going to be of service. That means you put up your hand when someone asks, you know, when they ask if someone wants to be a secretary or a greeter, or if they need the, at that time we smoked at meetings, if they want the ashtrays washed or the cups washed out, you are going to plant yourself in that position because that's how you're going to meet other people in AA. You know, otherwise you're going to plant your butt right at the back wall and you're going to sit there and not say a thing. Now, we've all done that, haven't you? I mean, haven't we all come into a meeting and plant our butt in the very back so we could make judgment calls on everybody out there and what they say and what they do and all that kind of stuff, you know? She said, no, not you, because you do it too quickly. You were, you know, you just were such a manipulator when you were out there that you need to get out of that status and move into this love and tolerance is our code. And I never understood that in the beginning of my sobriety, love and tolerance is our code, but I very much understand it today. You know, if I'm not out there being of service, there's something wrong with me, you know? And I make service a big part of my life. And practicing love and tolerance means that I need to love you in spite of me, you know, and sometimes that's just a darn hard, you know, because sometimes I just want to noodle you one, you know, and I can't noodle you one anymore. That's an old behavior. You know, I used to be the type of person that at work, there was this one situation where this guy was being a snot, and I was delivering mail at the time, and I was putting up mail, and he said something snotty, and so I leapt up and over the tops of these big cases that we delivered mail in, and I leapt up over the top of these cases and flew right down at him and was right in there cussing him up a blue streak. That was in my drinking days, okay? And I had to learn how to not do that type of behavior, but those are the things I used to do. No control. No, you know, no being honest, no realizing that I wasn't right about anything, or that I was right about everything, should I say. You know, it was all about me, and I had to learn in here that, you know, love and tolerance, I had to learn how to practice that, and I practiced it on all of you. You know, you were my specimen, you know, and I practiced it on you. And what's fun about that is I've learned how to take so many people into my heart in AA. You know, I just dig it. I don't know what else to say, but I dig it. You know, I've learned to keep my mouth shut and listen with big ears. You know, and not be such a big deal, not carry that false pride, which was an issue of mine. You know, not carry that around with me anymore. And I know Benita says, I think y'all probably know Benita if you go to meetings out here, but she always says, you know, the monkey got off her back, but the circus hasn't left town. You know, the circus is still spinning around up here in my head, you know. It's my own little private comedy store, you know, that I use for myself. And sometimes in situations, you know, I just want to go up and slap somebody, you know, and just slap them one and go, what are you saying? But in my head, I go, oh, what would your God want you to do in this moment in time? You know, obviously not slap the person. So what can you do? First, keep your mouth closed. You know, that's the first thought. Keep your mouth closed and give it some time. You know, and I've learned that in this program. Give things a little bit of time before you do what? Before you react. You know, that's what I did when I was drinking and using. I was one reactionary person. And what I've learned in here is how to take action and not be out there, you know, spinning off the walls and reacting to everything and being a crazy little girl. You know, because I was one little crazy wingnut. You know, and I had to learn how to reel that in and practice all these principles in this program and how to work the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And the best way to learn that is to take other people through it and sponsor people. That is the absolute best way to learn the steps, because then you have to put your learning cap on, you know, and sit down with another person with the big book, you know, let all the little bats fly out of your big book because you've thrown it in the corner somewhere, you know, and pick up that big book and open it up and actually help someone else through this program, because you know it's not about you. It's about Alcoholics Anonymous. It's about the 12 steps. It's about helping somebody find their way to their higher power. You know, you don't have the same higher power that I do, but I bet you they all get together and crack up about us all the time. I bet you they just have one hoot nanny about all the stuff that we do. You know, all of your higher powers, including mine, they all get together for a comedy store of their own. You know, and I like that about this program, you know, because my job is to be of service and to take you through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And the only way you can do that is by reading the book. You know, reading the book, being of service. Right now I'm working at Central Office, your Central Office, down in Clarita Valley Central Office. And it's on Reuther Street, if you don't know where it's at. And you can come over there anytime. You know, I'm there from, I'll tell you when I'm there. I'm there Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays from noon to 4. And we also have somebody there from noon to 4 on Tuesdays and Thursdays. Wow, you can go in there and buy literature 5 days a week now instead of calling somebody on the phone and having them come down and meet you. There's actually 5 days a week now that you can go over there and get literature and chips and stuff, you know, and talk. Because a lot of people just come in and talk to me. You know, their head is spinning off, you know, and they don't know what's going on, and, you know, their life's out of control, and, you know, they just need a place to center, you know, quiet place. So they sit with me because I'm a pretty good listener now, you know, because, again, it's not about me, you know, so I'm a pretty good listener. And you can come over. You can just come on over, bring your stuff, come on in, sit and knit, you know, sit and talk to me, buy some books, not buy some books, drink some coffee, hang out, whatever. You know, but it's being there and being a part of it. We have several shifts voluntarily, volunteer shifts that you can volunteer for if you want something to do, especially on the weekends. So, you know, just let me know. You'll see me at the convention. You know, just stop me and say you want to be of service. Give me your phone number and, you know, I'll get back to you. I will get back to you. But anyway, I just want to say thank you very much for each and every one of you suiting up and showing up for your sobriety tonight. It means a lot to me personally. You know, it really does. You know, from the bottom of my heart, it means a lot to me because you've been suiting up and showing up for me for 31 years. And I'm very grateful. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you, Joanne. All right, our next elder statement is Hank with 35 years. Will you come up and...
Thank you, sir. Thank you. My name is Hank, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hello, Hank.
Certainly glad to be here, and most of all, I'm glad that you're here. You know, I love this program. I want to thank Mark for asking me, inviting me, and the committee for accepting the invitation, you know. I love Alcoholics Anonymous, and I love this program. You know, and somebody mentioned to me a little bit earlier today, I was coming through the hall, they said, you clean up well. And I had to think about that, you know, and it took me down memory lane because I'm one of your typical alcoholics. I'm a prototype. And I received this gift on 5th Street in Los Angeles, you know. And I can remember the day like it was yesterday. You know, I had a little knapsack, and it had all my worldly possessions in it, you know. And I was the ripe old age of 29 years old, and I felt older then than I do today, you know. Life had beat me up pretty bad, I'll put it that way, you know. But anyway, I feel like I'm the luckiest person in the world because I got 12 step down there. And this guy looked at me and he said, son, looks like you got problems, you know. And I said, man, I've been having problems all my life, you know. And I had escaped from Chicago and come out here to for greener pastures. Actually, I thought I was going to get discovered in Hollywood, but it didn't go too well. I ended up, after going to this recovery house in Santa Monica called Synanon, I ended up on Skid Row. But anyway, this guy, I love this guy, you know. He saw something in me that I didn't understand, I didn't see, and I never would have thought possible. And he started taking me to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. He told me the magic words that we as Alcoholics Anonymous love to hear. He said, I have a solution to your problem. And when he said that, you know, I was ready. You know, so he started taking me to meetings, and somewhere along the line, the light went off, or went on. I really enjoyed going to Alcoholics Anonymous meetings, and I guess I really enjoyed it. I went every day, and I used to brag about that, but to be honest, the only reason I went every day is because I didn't have any other place to go. You know, I didn't have a job or anything, and everybody I knew was in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, so it was pretty simple for me. But the other lucky thing that happened, and I've been thinking about this over the past week, is that, and I guess because I talked to my sponsor, just this past week, I had some issues that had been bothering me, and he prefers to call them defects of character. But anyway, you know, and we talked, and this man has been my sponsor for 35 years. You know, I remember how nervous I was when I went to ask him to sponsor me, you know. And if he would have told me no, I would have been shattered, you know. But he told me that we can work this thing together, and that's what we've been doing for the past 35 years. And in those 35 years, he has never led me astray. He has always given me valid information that works, you know, and I love this guy. I love the program Alcoholics Anonymous because it you know, it took a broken kid from 5th in Los Angeles and made me into who I am today, you know. God has given me this amazing gift. It's an amazing gift. The more I stay sober, the more I realize just how amazing this gift is, you know. And I used to question, why me? I don't really question that anymore, you know. I just try to do my part, in trying to repay this gift that's been given to me. And that's in trying to share my story, you know, to other people who have the same problem that I have, you know. And that's what I do. You know, sometimes people ask me, what do I do? And I know that, you know, they mean what, you know, whether I'm a, you know, what work I do or this or that. And, you know, this is what I do, Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I try to share what's been given to me, you know. And my life is like a fairy tale. You know, my life is like a fairy tale. I've been given this amazing gift. I was at a meeting just the other day. And when I tell, he was a newcomer, he had about 30 days. And I told him that I had come off Skid Row when I first started. And so he looked at me and he said, wet brain, huh? I say, no, it wasn't wet, but it was pretty moist. You know what I mean? And I never did tell him, you know, how long I've been around, you know, because I'm of the opinion that for me, and this is only me, you know, it's important not how much time I have, but what I've done with that time, you know. And that's the important thing for me, you know. And I try to be of service to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I try to find my niche in Alcoholics Anonymous. And some people, I've done some service. I'm not a big service person, but my niche in Alcoholics Anonymous is talking to new people and being available in meetings, you know. And I can do that well. I can do that well. So I love this program. I was going to dish out some real juicy stuff that's been happening, but my wife walked in the meeting and that killed that, you know. So I'll stick to program stuff, okay? The 12 steps of recovery, you know. I love this thing, you know, I really do. Sometimes I have to pinch myself. I've told this story before. Sometimes I have to go back to Boston. And when I go back there, I have to sit in board meetings. And I sit there, and they've got this big mahogany table, and, you know, and it's classy stuff. You know, real classy stuff. And I sit at the table, and these guys have their suit and ties on, and I sit there with my suit and tie on, and they cross their legs, so I cross my legs, you know. And we discuss stuff, and I throw stuff out, you know. And then somewhere along the line, it hits me, you know. If these guys only knew who I was and what I was, you know, I mean, they kicked me off the island, you know. So God has given me this amazing gift, you know. And if you're new to Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, this is, I can't even describe it. Yeah, I can't describe it. You know, all I can say is that I just hope that you find what I found here in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. I'd like to say it's been easy, but it's had its bumps, you know, and I believe that bumps are important, because if it was smooth, you know, I'd probably take it for granted. But I've had enough bumps to know that there's something working in my life, you know, and I know that that's God. So I cherish those bumps, you know. So if you're new, make a lot of meetings, get to know us here in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I just hope that your God will be as good to you as mine's been to me, and thank you for letting me share.
A gift? No. Next up, Claudette.
I'm Claudette, and I'm a very grateful alcoholic. I was thinking about all the things I could thank you know, all the people I could thank, like the producers of this, my mom and dad, and the directors, Bob and Bill, and I'd like you all to just know that I'm really happy to be here. Well, I'm a little nervous. I was interested to hear Hank talk about Synanon. I haven't thought about that place for a long time, but it was down at the end of Pico Boulevard, and I used to take my kids down there to the beach. And one day, I locked my keys in my car, and I thought, oh, my God, what do I do now? The only place around is Synanon. So I said to the kids, okay, we're going to go in here and ask them if they can give us a dime so we can call AAA. But don't touch anybody, and don't take anything, and don't get what they got. I haven't thought about that for a long time. I love Alcoholics Anonymous also. You know, without this program and without the people that I've met through this program, I certainly would not have the life I have today. I was on my way to, well, my husband went to jail and I went to hell in a handbasket. That's what happened to me. I was married when I was still in high school. I was married to I used to call him my high school sweetheart, but there was nothing really sweet about this guy. So I don't know. You know, it was a guy I married. He bought my engagement ring with money that he made gambling. And I didn't realize how desperate a problem gambling could be until he was a fireman. And we lived in a split-level house in Woodland Hills with two cars in the garage and 2.3 kids and, you know, all the things that looked good. And he was going off to Vegas and Gardena and various other warehouses around town. For any of you who are gamblers, I know you know where they are. And they had midnight gambling parties that went on. Anyway, when it got so bad that he held up the local meat market, our meat market, they pulled him in, and he went to jail for a year, and they did plea bargaining. I didn't even know what plea bargaining was till I started watching, CSI and things like that. But he had written bad checks around town with my name on them. So when he was gone, I kept trying to make up for this by paying off the checks because he'd use his ID and my name and write checks. Finally, while I was dating my divorce attorney, he suggested that I might want to file for bankruptcy. And I found out that he had put a lot of furniture that we didn't even own on one of those things with beneficial finance. Anyway, I did that. And during this time when my husband went to jail for a year, it was almost like I put on his cloak and I took on the dark side of all that excitement that we used to go through. I mean, come home after gambling and losing money, you know, then he'd either come home drunk or he'd come home wanting to buy me a new ring or a new car or a new, you know, there's a sick side to that relationship when you're with someone who's addicted. For those of you who are Al-Anons, God bless you. I wish I'd found that program a long time ago. But anyway, while he went to jail, I found Kahlua. And it was a great, great looking bottle for one thing, you know. And anyway, that was probably the next 4 or 5 years of my life. And during that time, I met my present husband, who was introduced to me by someone that I'd gone to high school with and he'd known since grammar high school. They got married and we dated. And I knew this man was the best thing since sliced bread. I'm not kidding you. He drank like I did. He had a lot of money. He liked to do the things I did and eat out. We dated for about 4 years, and then he was transferred to Chicago. And I thought, well, there goes that. You know, he's gone. And like I said, I really did, by that time I knew that I had stepped over the line, and I remember very clearly. I was not alcoholic out of the get-go, because with that first husband, I was a watcher. I had to watch what he was doing, because I knew he'd either get in trouble in a fight, or, you know, drunk falling down on the lawn, I'd have to drive home. So I did a lot of watching during those years, and like I gave up the watch. Anyway. When he came back from Chicago, I was not the woman that he'd left behind, because by that time, I would make a decision I wasn't going to go out, and so I would stay home and drink, and then I'd get telephonitis, and call somebody up and go meet them somewhere, forget my car, you know, that same thing we've all gone through, wake up with somebody we didn't know, doing something we didn't know we were doing, someplace we didn't know we were, and I didn't know how all that was going to end. My husband and I were married about 4 years when I decided that it was time for me to stop all that. I'd taken my daughter to the local park that morning so she could learn to make brownies and pizza so they could eat without me, and stopped by my oldest daughter's house. And she said, "Mom, I'm really glad you're here." She said, "I've been wanting to talk to you." I said, "What?" I have daughters who are 20 years apart. She said, "I'm really worried." She said, is that all you and Dad do together anymore is just drink? And I said, "I'm glad you brought that up, honey. I'm going to go home and ask for a divorce." So I went home and I said, he was gardening, and I went out and I said, "I think we ought to get a divorce while we still like each other." And he said, "I think you better come up with another idea." I thought, damn, that's the best idea I've had. I could see myself over there on Cahuenga at Rubens or at Mami San. I worked in Hollywood for a number of years, so I knew all these places. Anyway. I went back into our house and sat down in a den that was decorated like a bar, and I put my hands between my knees and I bowed my head and I said, "Oh God, I can't do this anymore." Well, that little voice said, "Call AA." And I thought, "Oof, call AA." Okay, out I went. I said, "Okay, I'm going to go to AA." And he said, "That's pretty heavy, isn't it?" We can talk about divorce, but, you know, don't go to AA. I went to my first meeting that night, and there were 5 men there. John, you weren't there yet.
No.
I fell in love with the program. I fell in love with all 5 men. It was a draw. It brought me back again, because I don't know whether it was the second or third meeting, they made me secretary, and I started going to my meeting and advertising my meeting on Monday nights, and like I said, I fell in love with Alcoholics Anonymous. Actually, what they did is they gave me a book and they circled some meetings for me to go to, and they told me, okay, that was a Monday night, they told me to go to Superior Street on Tuesday night, go to Keys to the Kingdom on Wednesday night, go to Camarillo East on Thursday night, and go to Mason Lassen on Friday or Saturday, I forget. But I went, and I went, and I went. I went to 3 meetings a day for first 2 or 3 years of my sobriety. And people say, you know, you're on a pink cloud, now you're going to fall off. Don't be worried about when you have the letdown. That was 36 years ago, and I got to tell you, this morning I got up with my husband to go see his cancer doctors, got home in time to take a call from a very dear friend of mine who'd fallen and broken her wrist. So I was in 3 hospitals today because these are people I love. I don't run around. I don't have overlapping relationships anymore, things that, you know, drag me down. Girls, you know what I'm talking about. And I can show up for people that I love, but it's all because of Alcoholics Anonymous, because the woman I am today is the woman that I always wanted to that I dreamed about being, that I always wanted to be when I was a little girl, thinking about what I'd be like when I grew up. I'm a grandmother, I'm a great-grandmother, and most of those kids have never even seen me drink, thank God. Two of my kids have, and they paid a big price for it. But because, you know, we've told that Alcoholics Anonymous is a family disease, recovery can be too. I have a daughter who's going on 24 years sobriety. I have a granddaughter who's going to be 3. I still get goosebumps from that. How did that happen to them? You know, we're old-timers, or that's what they say we are. And you know what happens when you get to be an old-timer? You get to be old. My mother said to me one time, she said, you know, I can handle my age, but you and your brother are really getting old. And I've noticed that in my family today myself. I am so grateful for Alcoholics Anonymous. In exchange for a bottle and a hangover, I've been given the keys to the kingdom.
Excellent. All right. Thank you so much. This is such an honor. Well, Bob, you're up next.
Hi, I'm Bob. I'm an alcoholic. I see a number of familiar faces out there. And you're going to hear the same story because it doesn't change. It's a real privilege to be here tonight with my wonderful people here. You're my kind of people. And to hear these people share is incredible. I've developed the idea that I'm not very good at giving advice. I do very little of that. I try not to do that in AA because all I'm competent to do is to share my experience, strength, and hope. I'm not a marital advisor. I'm not a psychotherapist. I'm not a financial advisor. I'm not a counselor. All I have is my own experience and strength and hope that I've gained here. It started out, I grew up in a French-Canadian family where drinking wine was part of the culture. And I just became more cultured than the rest of the family. And I remember as a youngster, probably in what they call junior high, and I think they call it middle school now or something like that. My dad used to make his own port wine, and he stored it in the basement at home. And I used to go down after school and sample his port wine, but I didn't want him to recognize that the level was going down, so I would add water to it to keep the level up. And what gave me away was when that port wine started looking like vin rosé. That was probably a pretty good clue of where I was headed. Now, I went for a lot of years. Alcohol was not my problem. It was my solution to my problem. Because I felt so inferior and inadequate and not worthy of even taking up space on this planet. But alcohol kind of smoothed that over. I felt like I was a pimple on the ass of mankind, you know. But with alcohol, you know, I became as good and sometimes even superior to the people around me. And so I spent a lot of years, though, trying to control it. It kept getting worse and worse. And I didn't, for many years, didn't consider that I was an alcoholic. I finally reached a point where I was behaving pretty badly, and I said, well, maybe I have a predisposition to alcoholism. I didn't want to say that I was an alcoholic because I knew that would mean I would have to do something about it. And Alcoholics Anonymous was totally out of the question because that meant total abstinence. And a life of total abstinence was just too grim to contemplate. But when things finally got bad enough, the thing that tripped it over for me, I mentioned this the other night at a meeting, it's not a major event, but it's like the straw that broke the camel's back. It was my late wife's birthday And I showed up 2 hours late for her birthday dinner, and I was falling down drunk when I showed up. And the next day I just said, I can't do this anymore. I've got to do something. Well, I had gone to the public library, and I'd gotten some books on alcoholism, and one of them was the AA book, and I said, well, this is some kind of a flaky religious cult, and I'm not ready for this, because I was raised with the idea that God was angry, vengeful, hating entity that was going to burn my ass in hell for eternity for the kinds of things that I did. And if I really got my act together, I'd only get 400 years in purgatory. So I could not accept that kind of a God, so I just gave up the whole idea completely. I found a book in the library called Common Sense Drinking. They had some little things to do, like drink a shot of olive oil before you go out and drink because it would coat your stomach. And space your drinks 20 minutes apart. Do you know how long 20 minutes is when you're waiting for your drink? Eternity. So that didn't work for me. So finally, after this incident that I described, I called a guy who I knew was in AA. He had worked for me at one time. And when I left that company, he said to me, Bob, if I can ever do anything for you, don't hesitate to call me any time of the day or night. Well, I didn't know what he meant. He knew what he meant, but I didn't know what he meant. I thought, that's a nice gesture. Maybe he'd make bail for me or something. But I called him, and it was almost like he was waiting for my phone call. This is like 4 years later. And he took me to my first meeting, which was at the old Radford Clubhouse in North Hollywood. And I still had a lot of misgivings about this, you know, because to me, you know, an alcoholic was a guy that drank out of brown paper bags and slept in doorways. I had a good job, and I had a wife and two cars and a garage and a house with a mortgage that was not delinquent. And, you know, I couldn't be an alcoholic. But we pulled up in front of this place, and it was an old church building, you know, on Radford Street. And I thought, oh, God, what's going on here? Are we going to go into church here? And we went inside, and they had this stage up there. There was a piano on the stage. And I said, if they sing hymns in here, I'm getting the hell out of here. Well, it was a Monday night men's stag, and there was no hymn singing. And I didn't really know what to make of all this. I didn't understand what was going on. But the people were very nice to me, and they were very understanding. And I kept coming back to these meetings, and they were... Finally, I got this. They were talking about these 12 steps, and I said, "What is that?" And I read those and tried to understand them. I said, "Nobody does all those things. That's ridiculous. 12 steps." I said, "Even the Bible only has 10 commandments. You guys got 12." So I thought maybe I could just do this a la carte. You know, I could probably do that. And I heard some guy speak at a meeting early on. It said he'd bounced in and out of AA for 9 years, and he said he found that the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous is absolutely wonderful. As wonderful it is as it is, it's not going to keep you sober. It's the 12 steps that keep you sober. That's where the answer is found. And I didn't really want to hear that, but the motivation for me is I didn't want to go back to living the way I lived before. And that's the motivation that kept me coming back here. And being a quote unquote old timer, you know, it's very easy to get complacent in this program. I don't want to do that. And I always think back at the paragraph in the big book that says that it's easy to rest on our laurels and let up on a spiritual program of action. If we do, we're headed for trouble, because what we really have is a daily reprieve, you know. I like to say I'm a recovered alcoholic. Some people take exception to that. But it says that in the big book several times, recovered. That doesn't mean that I'm cured. And I kind of compare it. Recently, you've seen these things on television about shingles that said if you've ever had chicken pox, you still have the virus. Well, I have the alcoholic virus in me, even though I've recovered from alcoholism. And that means that I could go out there and just go off the deep end at any time with one drink. And I don't want to do that. And I am so grateful to be here. And I think often, when I was about 4 years old, riding around on my little tricycle in Detroit, in Akron, Ohio, 200 miles away, two guys got together and ignited the spark that was going to save my life, and I'm eternally grateful. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Bob.
John.
Hi, I'm John Bowman, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hello, John.
An unhyphenated alcoholic. Of the Jurassic Park variety, you know. Oh, I don't know. Appreciate being here. I was trying to think of all the witty things I could come up with, and they've all been used. I'd like to say I know Claudette, but we know each other through the program. And Hank and I have shared a couple podiums over the years. Don over there, he's going to thrill the hell out of you when he gets up here. If I don't go over too long. It's amazing that I stand here with 47 years, but I'm a little disappointed because it could have been 50. March of 1962, I made my first meeting in Burbank. And my sister took me. She was sober. She was my drinking partner, and she screwed everything up by getting sober. She drugged me off to a meeting at 1717 Magnolia Boulevard. And we walked in there, and all these old ladies come rushing over with rouge on their cheeks and the hair up and all blue and push-up. I was 27 years old. I said, "Oh, Beverly, is this the one we've been praying for?" Got a little spooky. But I didn't want to disappoint my sister, and so I decided to become perfect, and I didn't take another drink for about 60 days. And I didn't have another cigarette for about 60 days, because I was going to be pure and perfect. They pissed me off. And I started a young people's meeting there on Saturday night, because there was one down in Long Beach, wherever that was, and it was they called it the 2040 group. I figured, well, Burbank, you old people, you need a young stud in here, active, attractive, you know, you're full of shit. So they agreed. John, yeah, Saturday night's dark, we could have a young people's meeting. That's a good idea. Bring it to the business meeting. And I did. And I'm a pretty good business man. I had a job, ran a warehouse, had, you know, things like that. I came in with two cars, a house, and a wife and two kids, and a job. But they were a little, the old timers then were a little wiser than they are today, I think. They agreed that we should have a young people's meeting on Saturday night, but they disagreed with the fact that I should be the secretary of it, because I didn't have a year's sobriety, and that was a condition of the Burbank group. But I thought they'd just waive that. But they didn't. The guy was 37 years old. His hair was turning gray. He had been sober for 11 years. And they made him the secretary of the Saturday night meeting. Well, I couldn't let him upstage me, so I volunteered to be his coffee maker just to make sure it went right. And I opened up because I had a key, and I put the tables in a big circle type thing. I lit all these candles that I had bought and turned the lights down and made the coffee, and I was waiting for all the young people to come to that meeting because I had advertised it far and wide. And Martin walked in and looked around and blew out the candles, shut the lights up. He says, I think we want to do it this way, you know. Pissed me off. And then when we started the meeting, it was all the old people at Burbank coming there to wish us well, and I was the youngest person still there. Well, I mumbled and grumbled over that for a couple of weeks, and finally I closed up the meeting one night, threw the key through the mail slot, said, I'm off. Went down to Leon's Victoryland Cafe in North Hollywood there, edge of Burbank. Walked in and sat at the bar, and my friend Joe, the bartender, was there, and his name was Joe, young guy. Where have you been, John? This is after I ordered a double martini on the rocks. I took one sip, went over and threw money into the cigarette machine, bought a pack of Camels, and I'm sitting there with my martini and my Camel. And he says, where have you been, John? I said, well, I've been going to that goddamn AA. He says, the one over on Burbank there? I said, yeah, 1717 Magnolia. My dad goes there, and he starts to take my drink away. Oh, head full of AA and a belly full of booze, it really screws you up. But I fought it for the next 3 years. I like to remember my last night drinking. Because, you see, I could really admit I was an alcoholic when I was going to those first meetings. But my life wasn't unmanageable. I had a job. I was a manager. I had a wife, kids, you know, paying the bills, the whole nine yards. What do you mean my life's unmanageable? I manage 8-10 hours a day at that business and do it well, you know. And step two, came to believe a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. You'd never mentioned insanity in my family. You see, I mean, there was Aunt Martha that was a free spirit. But in our family, there was no such thing as insanity. Psychiatrists were insane. So we didn't talk about that. But my last day of drinking, I had done a real good job. I was getting ready to go on vacation. My trailer was packed and the wife and kids were at home. And I was going to come home around 5:30, 6 o'clock, and we'd take off the next morning. And my boss walked into my office and said, John, you've really done a good job. We appreciate you. I'm glad you're going on. Finally taking a 2-week vacation, you know. Maybe he knew something I didn't. But he shook my hand, and there was a wad of bills in my hand. I'm looking at those bills. Ooh. He says, have a wonderful time. And it was just about 11:30 in the morning. He says, get out of here and go have some fun. So I walked out, and it was in the middle of North Hollywood, right by Lancashire Boulevard. I lived that way, but I thought maybe my wife doesn't, I don't need to be home until 5:30. So I turned that way. Anybody know Lancashire Boulevard in North Hollywood? Okay. I started at the stage door. That's right next to Universal City. And I walked in there. I was going to have a little drinky poo and lunch. And I walked in. There's one other guy there. It was before the lunch crowd hit. And I ordered my drink. And he was sitting down at the other end of the bar. And I took a big swallow. And I got the strangest feeling. And I looked over at the door. And I was standing there watching me drink. Ooh. Now, I should have jumped right out and gone home. But I never left a drink in my life. So I finished my drink, got the hell out of there because I knew there was no good karma in this bar. And I started up Lancashire Boulevard towards Sun Valley. The biggest, longest street of saloons and broken dreams in the San Fernando Valley in 1965. And I smoked, and every bar I hit, I had a habit of picking up the matchbooks so I know where I've been. I had a few blackouts. You know, I love those blackouts. God, it was exciting going through the matchbooks saying, I better avoid that place. You know. Somewhere along the line, I blacked out before I blacked out, I was driving down Lancashire intending to go home. And I looked over at the passenger side of my car. For what reason, I don't know, but I was sitting there watching me drive. And I had to stop and have another drink because that was really unsettling. I came out of the blackout. It was pushing about 1:30 in the morning, and I'm standing at the Palomino Club with a three-piece suit, drunker than a skunk, with some redneck getting ready to punch my face out for something I'd said to his wife, mother, girlfriend, I don't know. That was my last drunk. I'll throw in this one little thing because I love it. A guy came over and separated us and got me out of there that I'd gone to high school with. I hadn't seen him since. And he was out looking for his older brother who was on a drunk. And he got me to my car. Sat me down, talked to me for a while, and finally I realized I could make it home. And I didn't see him again. His name is Dick Barton. 3 years ago, I stopped by a little gathering of some guys that finally got a hold of me and said, hey, you know, we all ran around together in high school. Come on, have lunch. So I finally, oh, God, I don't want to see these guys, you know. They're probably all old. I stopped in and, you know, it was a nice time. They were all drinking, but I didn't have to. And just before I left, in walked through the door was Dick Barton. And I had a chance to go up and say, you are my angel. You are the Eskimo that saved my life. He says, what? I said, you may not remember it, but in the Palomino Club, and I went through the story. And he stood there for a few minutes, and he started to grin. He says, you know, I vaguely remember, because he said, I was in and out of so many bars looking for my brother. I said, how is Dick? He says, he's dead. He said, he died an alcoholic. I said, well, I just want you to know that whenever I pitch anywhere, your name is on the table. And I was so grateful that I could say that to him. Because Alcoholics Anonymous took a self-centered, self-seeking, selfish, lying, cheating, scared to death kid at 30 and turned him into the man that I am today. Today I can look in the mirror and not spit at myself. Today, I can look in the mirror and say, John, I love you. You know, there's another book that says, love thy neighbor as thyself. As thyself. And here we learn how to love ourselves because you loved us. And then we can give that love away from God to me, through me to you, and back to me. I want to thank you. And I wish everybody in here the trip I've taken over the last 47 years, bumps and all, We wouldn't appreciate it if there wasn't some bums. And that's another story. Thank you.
Thank you, John. Thank you very much. Yeah, we're making excellent time. We'll be able to make it in time for the opening meeting. Don?
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you, sir. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Don Richards, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hello, Don.
And, oh, Lord. I didn't prepare a speech. That's supposed to be a joke. Give me just a second to reconnoiter here, would you please? Here I am. That wasn't supposed to be a joke. My life began on April Fool's Day, which ought to tell you something about me. In 1961, when I walked into an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, and there was a nice man at the door, he was a greeter, and he was well-dressed, and he was smiling, and he said, "May we help you, sir?" And I said, "Yes, sir." I'm pausing because this always makes me cry. I said, "Please tell me if there's anybody here for whom this thing has worked over any considerable period of time. I need to know because I can't stop." I'll get it together in a minute. "I can't stop drinking and I've tried everything else." And he raised his arm and he called something out. And in about 0.7 seconds, I was surrounded by maybe a dozen, maybe two dozen people. And they were all smiling. And they were all soft-spoken. They were very patient with me and very gentle with me. And I said, "Is there anybody here for whom, you know, that thing?" And two of those people had been sober 20 years. Now, at the time, Alcoholics Anonymous was only 27 years old. And I said to those two men, "How did you do that?" You know what they told me. They said, "A day at a time." And I swear I had never had that concept in my mind in my entire life. One day at a time. What a concept. What a concept. They talked with me for a while. They sat me down. They surrounded me. And I said to them at some point, "Nobody understands me." Excuse me. And they said, "Don, the only people..." I'm really having a hard time here tonight. "The only two people who were going to understand you were already in Alcoholics Anonymous." I need to tell you that all through that conversation with those people, I was bawling. I was not seeing it as very funny because I had quit drinking on New Year's Eve at the tail end of 1960 again. I quit drinking a lot. And I didn't touch it and I didn't think about it until the last day in March. My friend Frank called me. Here we go. I think I can do it now. My friend Frank called me up and said, "Would you come over and help me entertain some folks from my hometown? They're old people." And so I said, "You bet." And I went over there. And as I walked in, one of his servants handed me a vodka and tonic. And I just drank it down. And by the time I'd finished that one, a different servant came over and offered me another vodka and tonic. And I said, how do you know I drink vodka and tonic? And they said, oh, everybody knows you drink vodka. I had 3 vodka and tonics, and we had a very nice evening, and then I lay down on Frank's living room floor and fell asleep while the people were still visiting. This is going too slow. About 1 o'clock in the morning, Frank kicked me on the bottom of my foot and said, it's time to go. So I went home, and I went to bed, and I woke up in the morning. Before my eyes were open, I started bawling. And through that day, I remembered that I had overheard a conversation at work. I was working in the motion picture industry. And I'd overheard a conversation in which somebody said, somebody out in the hall said, whatever happened to Bob? And they said, oh, he moved over to Paramount. And he hadn't had a drink of alcohol for 11 months. And I didn't think about that at that time. But on this Sunday morning, I thought to myself, and so I got in touch with the guy, and I said, how did you do that? And he said, I went to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I said, what's that? And he told me about it, and I said, what do they do? He said, they have meetings and so forth. I said, they're going to have another one soon? He said, yeah. The son of a bitch lied to me. He said, we're going to have a beginner's meeting tonight. You think he had my number? It wasn't a beginner's meeting, but it was the, you know, and I went over there. And then the meeting started. I'm still at the meeting. And the meeting started, and I sat down, and I listened to people talking about things that I had been thinking about never telling anybody as long as I lived. And I sat there and I thought, how can they, don't they have any self-respect? They're talking about stuff like some guy, some dumb shit said that he got drunk and drove his car into a tree and the tree fell over on top of his car so he couldn't get out, and so he was in the car for 3 days before the highway patrol came. And I said, who is dumb enough to tell a story? Funny magic happened about halfway through that. Oh, golly, you shouldn't have invited me here tonight. I've been sitting here writing my speech, you know, and my head is so full of wondrous things. I'm going to get to it here in a second. After that night, you could not have driven me out of Alcoholics Anonymous with a bulldozer. The reason I say that my life started when I walked into my first Alcoholics Anonymous meeting should be very clear by now, because I'm speaking to my family. I never had any family as a child. I had 18,000 relatives, and I hated every one of them. I wandered the world, and I just suffered, unrelenting suffering, for 31 years. That's why I say my life started when I walked into Alcoholics Anonymous. I had a wonderful job, making more money than I'd ever seen in my life, and I couldn't stop drinking. And my boss was calling me into the office every about once a week and saying, you got to do something. And then I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. I looked in the Alcoholics Anonymous book, and it said all about character defects and shortcomings. And I said, what are they? So I looked them up. Jealousy, envy, resentment, fear, frustration, sulking, silent scorn, making rationalization an art form. We are people who eat and drink and grab for more of everything, fearing there'll never be enough. All stuff like that. We are people who love to rub salt into our own wounds. Now, that's one of the things that astonishes me. The other day I heard a guy talking about how many people he'd known who have, he's a long timer, how many people he'd known who had come to Alcoholics Anonymous and didn't make it and died drunk, how many people had stayed for long periods and then died drunk. And the reason I'm saying all this is because from the minute I walked into Alcoholics Anonymous, so desperate and so filled with despair, that it's, I read in the book, we think the person who says that sobriety is enough is unthinking. Like the farmer who comes out of the storm shelter and sees all the cows blown over to Indiana, says, ain't it grand the wind stopped blowing, Ma? Don't see nothing the matter here. Well, I watched so many people, thank you, my time is up. I watched so very many people die drunk long after. And I want to tell you, if you're kind of new here to Alcoholics Anonymous, I would like to make a suggestion to you. If you'd like to take a cake for 51 years sometime, or get a chip for 30 days, or get a cake for a year, anything like that, and you're kind of new to Alcoholics Anonymous, with every bit of sincerity in my soul, I suggest that you start tonight. Thanks for listening.
Okay, here, Don. Thank you, Don. Okay. We have one more. I want to thank Gloria for coming all the way up here. She has 54 years, and in 2 days, this Sunday, she'll be celebrating 55 years with us. So come and share with us.
My name is Gloria, and I'm a grateful recovering alcoholic.
Gloria.
This guy that was sitting next to me, he said to me, he whispered in my ear, he said, you know, you and I is older than Alcoholic Anonymous. Now, I don't know if I needed to hear that or not. But he shared that with me. But, you know, it's such a wonderful experience going to meetings these days and seeing all the beautiful faces of people that have found a new way of life. And to know that this program do work. It will work in our life one day at a time if we just really, Bill Wilson said, follow the directions. That's what he did in his original speak on the 12 steps. But when I first came into the program, there was only 3 women that was present at that meeting. And one of the women had relapsed, and she came up to me, and she was sort of shaking. She said, you keep coming, and you get what I got. Now, I didn't know if I needed that, but good advice. And the other lady, she came up to me, and she said, you know, I'm going to teach you a little bit about the ins and outs of Alcoholic Anonymous. And so I was listening, and she was telling me the do's and don'ts and who to talk to and who not to talk to. And I found out that she was still turning tricks for the coffee. She didn't know it was free. You know? The third lady became my sponsor in the program. But I often thought about those women, and I realized that lady that came up shaking and telling me about, you know, I could get what she got. She had more than I had because she had hope that this program could work in her life. Even though she had relapsed, she believed in the principles of this program. And so I later became grateful that I met her. The other lady that was talking about the coffee stuff, well, I found out that she was doing what we all have learned to do, was to reach out and share hope and let us know and protect us in this program, the love and the unity that's in this fellowship. And that's what she was trying to do, is help a newcomer find their way. And I was eternally grateful that I met her. So, you know, this program, it's, you know, I can't say enough of what Alcoholic Anonymous have meant in my life, and each one of you has shared in this journey that I've been on. You know I was listening to my partner over there, and, you know, it's not always, it's a struggle day by day. We go through a lot of ups and downs, but the point of it is we have found the foundation in our life that will work. One of the great experiences I had in this fellowship was to be at meetings where Bill Wilson and Lois and some of those first 100 people were present at those meetings. And the thing that Bill Wilson did one time, and I never saw it done in Alcoholics Anonymous since, he had us all stand up and hold hands and sing a song. And the song he had us sing was, "It's No Secret What God Can Do. What He's done for others, He can do for you." And he said, "This is the hope that I want to give to each one of you in this fellowship. That, you know, it's about when we get clean and sober, we have a message to carry." And he gave us that whenever, and they read it here tonight in the book, whenever anyone, anywhere need help, he wants the hands of AA to be there. And this is why we are responsible. We are responsible today. That we're responsible, and they had a piece of literature that they used to always read. It was why we was chosen. We was chosen and given this gift of recovery so that we could help those that are suffering. You know, in these rooms, and they're beautiful, but there is millions of people dying daily in this disease. And some of us, you know, we get a little comfortable in our recovery. We don't think, well, you know, I make a meeting a week, or I go out every now and then on a 12-step call. But we do have a responsibility. I was listening at a meeting one night, and an old gentleman was telling about an experience that he knew of. And it was about a farmer. And this farmer lived way back in the hills at that time. And it was before they had cars, and he didn't even have a buggy or a horse. He just lived back in the woods. And he had a child. And his child was saying to him, "Well, Daddy, next time you go to town, I want you to carry me with you because I want to see what the town looked like." And so the father promised him that he would take him to town. And when that day finally arrived, the little boy was all excited, and he got ready to go. And it was a long journey to town. They had to go through the woods. They had to go through a lot to get there. So in taking the little boy's hand and guiding him along, the journey got a little far, and the little boy got tired. So the father, he saw a tree trunk, and he told the little boy, "You sit here and you wait at this tree trunk, and Daddy will be back for you." And he had a little light, and he gave it to his son. He said, "Now, son, you hold this light till Daddy come back for you." And the little boy said, "Okay," and he watched his daddy walk down the road. Well, while the little boy was sitting there came some people by, and they looked at the little boy sitting there, and they start laughing at him and making fun at him. "What are you sitting here for?" And they criticized and laughed at the little boy. And the little boy felt a little hurt, but he held the light, and he waited for his father. You know, it began to storm and to rain, and rain fell on the little boy, and he got soaking wet. But in the midst of that, he held on to that light. And it got dark, and there was clouds and darkness all around the little boy. He got frightened. He thought, well, it was that an animal, a bear, something he began to see in the darkness, and he was afraid, but he held the light. And he began to look down the road, and he saw this image of this man coming, and it was his father. And the little boy, he got excited. He ran to meet his father, and he said to his father, he said, "Daddy, there were some people came by, and they made fun at me. They laughed at me and talked about me, Daddy, but I held the light." And, you know, he said, "Well, Daddy, you know, it began to rain, and I didn't know what to do, and I got wet, but I held the light. I knew you were coming, and I held the light." And then, you know, the little boy, he talked about the darkness and the fear and how afraid he had been. But he said, "Daddy, in the midst of the fear, I held the light." And to me, that's a message of this program, that God has given each one of us a light. That light is your sobriety. In the dark world we live in, you are the only light you have the answer for this disease that is killing so many young people all around us. I get calls from mothers and fathers about their children, and they don't know what to do. But you know, each one of us have been given that light. And I know sometime it wasn't easy for you, because in the beginning of our recovery, they made fun of us. You know, they talked about us, and, you know, they looked at us as failures, as rejects, and things of this nature. But, you know, once we had gotten into those rooms and felt the love and comfort of those rooms, we held on to our life. And, you know, it got dark in our life many, many times, because we go through ups and downs and challenges. They're not problems, they're challenges that we can grow and learn through. But it gets dark and we get a little discouraged and a little afraid. But if you hold on to that light, you know, even when the rain comes and the discouragement comes, and people may laugh at you, talk about you, you may go through divorces, separations, many things may happen, but if you hold that light. And I know for me, one day I hope that if I hold this light, that one day when I meet my Father, when I take this journey into eternity, that I will say to Him, Father, I held the light. I did all I knew, but I held the light. And that's a challenge for each one of us, that in this dark world, you have the light. And it's your responsibility, not just to sit at home and enjoy your recovery. It's our responsibility to reach out and touch the lives of those people that are suffering. My name is Gloria, and I'm a grateful recovering alcoholic.